The reason I went to Cuba is strange that you came to New Orleans, and we didn't talk about that. Although there are a lot of people in public health wouldn't want to talk about this because this was an embarrassment. Within the first 7 days, I had a hospital in this building. And one of the biggest arguments I had was local public health people who wanted me to take a completely deployable Army hospital take everything out of it and put it in the front of this building. In the small rooms, when you approach this building from that direction, the north, there's some smaller rooms there. Well, they wanted me to take that hospital and take it apart, and I said no. So we drove that hospital in the expo hall, and the hospital was set up inside the expo hall in these magical boxes that opened up into operating rooms, into surgical cabins in them. All of the tests and laboratory work you need to do to run a trauma center was in the back of this building that you've been in all week. And in the front of this building, 60,000 people stood and waited till we evacuated them. One of the problems with evacuation is people with that have mental problems because they've gone days without medication. I wish I could have told that story to the larger audience. That didn't happen this year, but we'll see what happens if we can work it out next year in the 10th year of Katrina when y'all go to Chicago. We might get to tell that story. This is why I was motivated to go to Cuba. You see, because Hurricane Katrina went to Cuba before it came to New Orleans. And since then, Hurricane Sandy, that caused a lot of damage in the northeastern United States, gone through Cuba. Matter of fact, Sandy went through Santiago de Cuba as a Category 3. And as I recall, we were there last year, less than 30 people died with a Category 3 direct hit on Santiago de Cuba. The simple solution in Cuba, as demonstrated on the slides, is that they take action before the storm occurs. And the actions are simple. Actions like women with infant children are encouraged to go to collection areas. Pregnant women are collected first and then taken to specific hospitals so they can be there in the event the birth happens during the storm. The other thing the Cubans do is elderly, the vulnerable population, elderly people and people who are on dialysis, can call a taxi, and the taxi will pick them up and take them to a collection point. Now, that's a country of 10 million and a poor country, but their priority is to save people's lives. So they act before the storm arrives. So by the time you go to hurricane warning, they have evacuated the vulnerable populations. The elderly, the disabled, and the pregnant women, as well as the women with infant children. ability to prevent death to the most vulnerable populations when the storm, the eye of the storm, arrives in Cuba. On the other hand, these buses were ordered after the city flooded. Because the way our response is arranged in America, the initial response is the responsibility of the state and the cities. And the federal government only get involved once there's a request from the governor of that particular state. Thank you. As in the case of New Orleans, the city flooded, and then requests went to the federal government to help transport the people that were in the city, to include many elderly people who were in assisted living homes that were evacuated after the city had flooded. So it took us 7 days after the storm to evacuate the elderly patients that had been cared for, some of them in buildings where the first floor was underwater, and they were kept in the top of the building. So it took us 7 days to do what Cuba does before the storm. Hurricane Sandy, the federal government does try to, what they call, lean forward, do things before the storm arrives. As in the case of Hurricane Sandy, FEMA mobilized ambulance teams from Ohio. Now, those of you that have been to New Jersey, what good does an ambulance team do you in New Jersey if they're from Ohio? It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. What we found in Hurricane Sandy also is a lot of the vulnerable population in buildings without backup power. Because when the power go out in a high-rise building, those buildings become death traps. Particularly if the first floor has water, and the building does not have electricity or for air conditioning and heating, because most of those buildings you cannot open the windows. So I'm giving you the true extreme. I'm not telling you that everything we do in America is absolutely backward or wrong. It's just not effective and efficient. We don't get the result for the money we spend. An ambulance crew costs about $3,000 a day from another state. Got me? Whereas, if you don't have that money, you find other solutions. You find local solutions. The problem is, in our form of government, the reimbursements for doing things that might prevent people from being caught as a victim in a disaster. Normally that doesn't pay until after there's a declaration. And we need to change that. Because I think in the world of public health, you do your best work to prevent a disaster. One of my biggest tasks the first week after Hurricane Katrina was the distribution of medical people along the Mississippi coast to provide tetanus shots. We would run into people, and my public health officer taught me a little trick. Because normally people don't know if their tetanus shot is current. Who would you know if your tetanus shot is still current? That's pretty good. Oh, y'all lying. How many of y'all know first aid? First aid. That's better than it used to be. one place, you try to evacuate and search all the homes and evacuate the dead. In the other place, you're competing trying to get tetanus shots and medication. So, when the opportunity came to go to Cuba, to understand that they had the working model, and I thought it worked the first time, and since I've gone three times now, and each time I go to Cuba, I see a local solution, a community-based solution. A community-based solution that started the schools because they teach disaster preparedness in the schools to the children. Before hurricane season, those children, high school children, will go out in the community and they'll inspect the homes, and they'll talk to people, and they have questions that the local government asks them to ask the residents, as well as they'll inspect the homes to see if there's a limb hanging over a wire, that if the limb falls, it'll turn the electricity off. Because when you lose electricity, you can create a disaster for yourself if you don't have electricity. And as well as looking at the storm drains to see if they are full of debris. And then someone will come behind those students and clean that debris up or cut that limb. That is how you build a culture of preparedness. Because the culture of preparedness is having a clean understanding that Mother Nature on any given day can destroy anything built by man. It's the things that we do, the man-made disasters, that scare me the most. So going to Cuba and getting to learn their lessons in hurricane preparedness was instrumental and helped me describe to people that the type of worst-case scenarios we face in America is not the natural disaster, it's the man-made disaster that follows. And the one that we can almost predict is going to happen. Our two largest hospitals in this town, even though the city is below sea level, the generators were in the basement. Now, I got all kind of criticism for not getting to New Orleans early enough. Okay? Where's the criticism for the engineer and the architect and the governor that made a decision to put a generator in the basement in a city that we knew was going to flood? Where is it? Nobody will let them know anything. But they will remember the name of the governor. And unfortunately, they'll remember the name of the mayor. Unfortunately, the mayor is in jail now. Because he became a victim of the storm in more ways than one. So, I want to thank our friends from Cuba for coming and sharing again. And I get to go around the country talking to people about disaster preparedness and response. And I used to describe this slide a lot different to people before I went to Cuba. Now I tell people we lose more homes and lives to flooding every year than any other event. So they asked me, General, how do you know if you have a threat for flooding? And I went to them, how would the Cubans answer this? The Cuban answer would be, if you can see water from your house, you might flood. It's just that simple. You don't need a NASA model. If you can see water from your house, you probably from a tsunami, a natural disaster, that became a man-made disaster. And the reflection I've done since then on what happened in New Orleans, and trying to operate on the streets of New Orleans, the public health hazard from sewer back up once the flood came, to the exposure from chemical plants, as well as refineries in St. Bernard Parish that have a lot of chemicals that the people inside those communities don't know what's in those plants, nor do the first responders, nor do the public health people. I can tell you, we've got to fix that. We have to fix that. Because it's not the natural disaster that scared me, because I was raised, and you were raised, to know that on any given day, Mother Nature can destroy anything built by man. But little did the people in Japan know what would be the impact of a nuclear power plant that lost power and became flooded. And the impact it may have for dozens of years on people, homes, and property because of the exposure. Little did we know the impact of a little small place like Mossville, Louisiana. Mossville, Louisiana is an African-American community established after the Emancipation Proclamation that is surrounded by 11 chemical plants. There are no birds in Mossville. We are moving to a point where the people, homes are being bought out to put another plant in. Ladies and gentlemen, Mossville is near Lake Charles, Louisiana. If you remember Hurricane Rita, Lake Charles, Louisiana was underwater. It's happened before, it's going to happen again. And when you have that many chemical plants in one place, it's already taken out a community of people. The health, the asthma rate in those small places like Mossville and St. Rose is 10 times that of the rest of America. So I know the professor spoke earlier about climate change. As public health people, I challenge you, we ought not talk about climate change. We need to talk about pollution. Because pollution is killing people now. Climate change is going to have extraordinary effect on future generations and how we live and where we live. Pollution creates climate change. We need to figure out how we're going to end pollution in places like Mossville and St. Rose, Louisiana. St. Rose is right at the end of New Orleans Airport at the river and St. Charles Parish. I can take you to one house in St. Rose that's within 500 feet of a refinery where the grandma, the mom, and the daughter are all on air respiration. Air respirators at night. Is that the right word? You're talking. 2 years ago, when the American government was worried about people in Syria being and the care for pregnant women. The results are significant, and they've been collaborated by others. They do well with disaster medicine deployment. On several occasions, they've deployed that Heavenly Reed Brigade to global disasters with great results. 2,500 doctors, nurses, and technicians get on the airplane, fly somewhere, and help solve a problem. So I'm impressed with what they did. You've gotten the detail on that, and I thank you for the opportunity to come speak, Doc.
Thank you very much. Very sobering. Why don't you come back up, Dr. Ochoa, and we'll take some questions from the audience. So the question is, what can be learned immediately from the Cuban model and implemented at the local level here in New Orleans? I guess that one's for you.
If you went to the city of Havana, evacuation is about 2 miles because the biggest threat is from the coastal flooding. So you can go 2 miles and be at an elevation and be away from coastal flooding. On the other hand, in New Orleans, when Hurricane Katrina came, the Mississippi River went north. It flowed north. So it brought water out of the Gulf, overflowing Plaquemine and St. Bernard Parish, and pushed the water into Lake Bore and flooded the city coming in from Lake Pontchartrain and Lake Bore area. So we have a much more dynamic issue to deal with in terms of evacuation and the number of people in the lower parishes. Basically, all along Interstate 10, from Pascagoula, Mississippi, all the way to Lake Charles, Louisiana, we are vulnerable to flooding. So the basics is, again, is to get people to understand. If you can see water, is subject to flood, either from the rain or from the coastal tidal surge, what we call surge, and what the Cubans call coastal flooding. I think we have to be a lot more open with people. We've built a lot of homes in and along the Mississippi River and the coastland that we know are in flood zones. They are in known flood zones. But the local authorities allow subdivisions to be built. Matter of fact, during Hurricane Isaac, the nursing home that we were evacuating the night Isaac came is the same nursing home we evacuated the week after Katrina. So why is that nursing home still there? Right there in Plaquemine Parish in Belchase. I hope that's not the same people. It must be saying, well, you know, what's going on? But I do think there are a lot of things we could do better based on the Cuban model. Just keep it simple. The other thing is a big problem after a storm is water. I'm of the opinion that we should store water in the city. Normally we have very few big conventions here in August, in September. The Expo could become a place where we store water. This place has proven several times that it doesn't flood. We can store the water here, and if we need water, we have it. And as I told you, we had a hospital in the back of this expo in the response to Katrina. We could have one in the back ready to go during hurricane season if we need it. So there are things that we could do. The idea is who paid for it. But the best thing we could do is get people to be ready. People have to have a culture of preparedness in their mind.
Back there.
I just wanted to make a reference to talking about children in school. It sounds fantastic to me. I remember when I was working on H1N1 that I saw a little kid tell their parent, like, oh, you're supposed to sit in your elbow. So, I mean, I think you're right. It's amazing when kids can teach their parents.
I think, number one, we would end overtime. Believe it or not, most of the money given to a city the first 2 weeks after disaster is for overtime. Because everybody go on a 20-hour day. All the police, all the fire. And I tell you that not as a rub, because as soldiers we don't get overtime. But I think it disrupts the responsiveness of the first responders to the people. You with me? It's a disruptor. I don't want, when you're in the response phase, imagine the first responder said, well, a doctor is having a problem, I'll go get him. I can stay up 2 more hours. I saw too much of that. Police and fire trying to run out the overtime clock. Now I'm going to talk to you about the idea of solving the future problem is to speak about the unspeakable. If you wanted to hear everything everybody agreed with, you'd go to the rest of this conference and hear that. Because everybody agreed with that. I'm going to speak about the unspeakable. Because in your generation, this has to be adjusted. What we end up with after the disaster is Hurricane Sandy. We sent a 10-man search and rescue team from Memphis to Hurricane Sandy. They were there 10 days. Price, guess how much it cost? $800,000. Does that make sense? How much that money, for that money could have gone before the storm and preventing people from being in positions that would cause somebody to have to go rescue them. You with me? Some of this don't make sense. We imported doctors here and nurses. We were imported nurses here from Chicago weeks after Katrina at a price of about $700 a day. They would fly in the morning, they'd pull a ship, get on a Delta jet, and go back. That is stupid. And we need to call it out because we have never really put a wire brush on the real stupid stuff. You know, the mayor is going to jail. The governor didn't get reelected. But the rest of this system here, as well as Hurricane Sandy up in New Jersey, we need to put a wire brush on it because we are doing some stupid stuff. And I hope that isn't a little too raw to you, but it's the reality in my eyes. But I'm not running for office. Yet.
Yes.
This question is actually to both the speakers. I'm taking up on what the earlier question was regarding the legal framework for declaring a disaster and evacuating people. So how is it done in Cuba? What's the law in the United States?
Yo traté de explicar al principio que el desastre nosotros lo consideramos a partir de los efectos que sufre la población.
So on my opening remarks I said that a disaster for us is not the storm itself, it's the consequences or the impact. In terms of human lives lost, material losses, state institutions affected, and natural resources affected.
La declaración del desastre depende de la magnitud.
And disasters are declared according to the magnitude
de eso,
of the damages.
Eso existe, el Estado tiene las posibilidades, los registros de cuándo considera un desastre.
And there are very specific guidelines on when to declare the magnitude of a disaster.
Sin embargo,
but,
para todo el cubano, un desastre es cuando se muere una persona.
But for every Cuban person, a disaster happens when one person dies.
In the United States, our disaster declaration, can emergency powers associated with that vary by states. In some states, the mayor, the local senior elected official, is the way our constitution is built, is responsible for the security of the people in that particular area. In New Orleans, we have a city parish government where we have a parish council and the mayor that runs the parish. Now, I can take you to another parish right next door that is totally different. But in this particular place, this will work a quick scenario based on weather forecast for Katrina walking that forward. The mayor went to voluntary evacuation on Friday. Katrina hit Sunday night, Monday. So it starts at the local city, parish, then the governor has state powers for declaring emergency declaration. Each one of them come with some responsibilities associated with who pays for things that we are directing people to do. And then what are the economic impacts? The federal government is the last one to declare a disaster, because as soon as the federal government declares a disaster, the federal government start paying. Up to 75% of all the overtime, everything anybody declare. So the federal government, even though during Hurricane Katrina, the president did a pre-declaration. It's been done twice. That was the second time it ever been done. On Saturday before Katrina hit, President Bush did a pre-declaration. The problem is, all the bureaucrats, they had never seen a pre-declaration before. So they were all waiting around until after the storm hit to wait for the state to ask them for something. Does that make sense to you? So in practicality, it goes from the mayor to the governor to the president of the United States. The governor would normally request to the president in a letter that he declare the state of Louisiana a disaster. The federal government would come back and say, okay, we won't do the whole state, we'll do this part that we know that are directly affected. Because, again, it is what it is, as we say. Because if you say the whole states, you'll be replacing roofs in Shreveport. And you'll be doing flood damage assessment in Shreveport. And you'll be replacing chickens that died in Shreveport that was nowhere near the storm. So the federal government has some rules, but that's how it's done. In execution, it is not clean in a democracy like this. They have a little different form of democracy there in Cuba that in that way I admire it. But here, our democracy, when the mayor said evacuate on Friday, the school board in New Orleans said, well, we're not closing because they don't work for the mayor. They're an independent body. And they said, well, where the children going to go if we close school? The Saints had a game that Friday night. Okay? Here comes the culture. He mentioned culture. We are a town that like to do what? People come here to party. We are a destination for a party. You mean we're going to not have a game tonight? The storm isn't coming until Sunday night. So they had the game. That delayed people from evacuating. The Saturday morning, when they went to mandatory evacuation, Louisiana State University, our flagship university 70 miles away, had a football game. So when you have a football game that close in Baton Rouge, it ties up the hotel rooms for people who might have moved from here and went to Baton Rouge. So on paper, it looks very clean. But as you know, in a democracy, things get real stupid. So in execution, it's normally very clumsy in the pre-declaration and in the declaration. So it's not as clean as it looks on paper. Concern, and that is why when you go to mandatory evacuation, normally the National Guard is mobilized, as well as large numbers of police are trying to be kept in the area. The problem is, under the U.S. Constitution, mandatory evacuation isn't mandatory. So there will be some people who said, "I want to stay. I'm an able-bodied person. I want to stay in my house. I know what to do. I've got a boat. I'm protecting my property." Constitutionally, they can do it. Now, we have exceptions to that if the person is meant to be have mental challenge. Then you got to go see a judge. You go get them, get the police. You know, the whole judicial process have to go through. On the other hand, you got people who say, "I'm not leaving because I'm 75 years old. I've lived through 3 hurricanes here. I'm not leaving. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die in my house. And I don't want to take my dog. My dog is old. If I try to move the dog will die." And then you got the other issue. And this is a quick little story. The Wednesday after I sent a soldier from the 82nd Airborne. They were going in the homes to check people. And they came in this house, and this lady was in ankle-deep water, standing in a house with apron on. And Staff Sergeant and 2 privates walked in. And she said, "Ma'am, we're from the 82nd Airborne Division. We're here to get you. We're going to take you to safety."
About the general mention culture, and I'm speaking as a Cuban who has been suffering from the hurricane forever, and I have to evacuate and all that, and a mother with a child. And it also connects with what he just said about community. When you train people and you explain to people the danger over and over and over, and you create that culture of awareness, and Cubans are very poor people. We don't want to lose our TV sets because we don't know when we can replace them. We don't want to lose our mattresses. And when you have a flood, the first thing that goes, and a mattress you can dry. When it's wet, it's gone. And what we do is that because we have such a culture of awareness, is that we know the hurricane is coming, and when we know it's going to be a bad one, and that's a very important also to have a culture of staying in tune to the weather forecast, and which is something we do all the time. Like every Cuban, even someone who only has 6th grade of education, knows what a cone is. It's like it's embedded in the culture from primary school. And so we take our stuff, the things that we value, that we don't want to lose, and take it to a neighbor, take it to a friend, move it somewhere else. And so people do evacuate, but that's, and it's a community thing. Every community, let's say the health volunteers and the family doctor and the nurse, they know how many elderly living alone they have in their community. They know how many pregnant women they have. They know, and when we go from the warning to the emergency phase, by that time, we have already gone house to house and made sure, hey, the redhead translator who lives with the little girl, she shouldn't be out there on the third floor. Make sure they're okay. But that's a very community thing. Even though it's a national plan and the government supports the plan, every community knows its vulnerability and makes sure it's covered before thing happens, not after.
They don't have insurance like we have, and they don't have FEMA. FEMA may be the worst thing that happened to us. It was designed in the Stafford Act for a good reason, to get people back in shelter. But I'm not quite for FEMA or insurance were designed to replace 7 flat-screen TVs on the first floor in a house you know will flood. You understand? Mm-hmm. Cubans understand. If you leave your stove, your refrigerator, and your mattress, and you don't evacuate it, you're going to have to wait to get one. So I think we take unnecessary risks in America.
Sí, doctor.
I just want to say 2 things. I am old enough to have lived through things before the revolution in 1959 and after
1959.
To have that culture and that community participation has not been easy. It's constant work, permanent work. And you cannot expect that a law or a decree is going to get it done. The family who lives in faraway rural areas were very, very attached to their goods, to their farm, to their things. And some rather die than leave their land.
Mm-hmm.
But generations after generations of education change. But I want to add a key aspect, which is solidarity. People who have sturdy homes bring in others whose houses are not as sturdy. And people, they know they bring food, they bring their things over.
Mm-hmm. institución estatal.
This is not a state-run institution.
Sino lo que significa la solidaridad.
Just human solidarity.
Eso quería decir. Yo quisiera agradecer a General por su palabra tan sentida.
I'd like to thank the General for his very much heartfelt words.
Como él ha sabido apreciar la situación de Cuba.
For your appreciation of the work we do in Cuba.
Y que sabe que no solamente los recursos son lo que salvan.
And you know that resources are not the only thing that save lives.
Sino la educación,
but education,
la cultura,
culture,
y el principio fundamental que decía el profesor.
And the fundamental principle that Professor mentioned.
Para nosotros, una sola muerte es un desastre.
The loss of just one person is a disaster. Thank you very much.
And thank you all very much. I think this is a very good note on which to close this session. And thank you for your patience at the beginning as well.